Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. And of course, we're following the news that broke this morning about the president's firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. The president tweeted this morning that he was replacing Tillerson with CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Sources are telling national news organizations that Tillerson is not clear about why he was fired. We're turning for some analysis to guests this hour. We're also opening the phone lines for your questions. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. What do you want to know about Tillerson's legacy? What do you want to know about what bringing in a new Secretary of State will mean for the way the State Department is run, and any other questions on that? 651-227-6000 and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Our guest for the first part of the conversation, Scott Jennings, is a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. He's a partner at a Louisville, Kentucky public relations firm, and he joins us today from New York. And Scott, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate being here today.
David Shanzer is with us. He's director of Duke University's Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security, and he's with us today from China. And David, welcome to you. It's good to have you on the show.
Well, thank you.
Scott, the Washington Post is reporting that the president thought Tillerson was, quote, too establishment in his thinking. Did you see evidence that that's one of the places that the two men clashed? And what does that really mean?
Well, I think that it's been apparent for some time that the president and the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, have just not been on the same page. Take the Iran deal, for instance. President Trump hates the Iran deal, and Secretary Tillerson was trying to preserve it. Take President Trump dealing with the North Koreans last week. He made a decision to meet with North Korea's leader, which is a monumental decision, and Rex Tillerson wasn't involved and wasn't even in the country when the president decided to do that. You can see the president had lost confidence that Rex Tillerson was on the same page with him. And unlike other cabinet secretaries, the Secretary of State and the president have to be lockstep because, of course, when the Secretary of State is abroad and speaking, he speaks for the president. Other world leaders have to believe the Secretary of State is speaking as though the president was speaking. That wasn't the case here. And I don't know what the word establishment means in this case, but I do think clearly with Trump and Tillerson on different pages on so many issues, it was probably time for a change.
David, Scott has put his finger on something I wanted to follow up with you on, and that's what establishment might mean in this context. Could it mean, well, he listens to the advice of our intelligence and our State Department analysts, and you know, sometimes I want to do things that don't agree with what they say? What do you see the context of establishment meaning in this case?
Well, Tillerson wanted to, you know, abide by the, you know, 40 or 50 years of bipartisan traditional U.S. foreign policy, which was support for our allies, support for, you know, free trade around the world, abiding by treaties that we've agreed to in the past. And Trump has a, you know, very mercurial, instinctive gut reaction, and of course his idea of you know, promoting, you know, U.S. nationalism as the core guiding principle. None of those things are establishment. And Rex Tillerson is someone who, you know, had run a multilateral corporation, ExxonMobil, that has relationships around the world, understood the value of our system of alliances, our system of free trade, and so on. And Trump really just didn't share those same values.
A call here from Rob in Lake Elmo. Hi, Rob. What do you want to know about this?
Hi. Thanks for accepting my call.
Sure.
It seems to me that Rex Tillerson offering support for England and Theresa May about the Russian poisoning in England has more to do with, I think this firing has more to do with Tillerson actually supporting England, not so much in supporting England, but in criticizing Russia. And I think it has some more to do with Trump's support for Russia.
Scott, I did want to ask you about where Rex Tillerson was on Russia. When Tillerson was nominated, there was serious concern about how friendly he was with Vladimir Putin. And that there was additional concern about that because President Trump had expressed such warmth for Putin. Did Tillerson turn out to be more of an objective voice on Russia than the president expected?
I think Tillerson and many people in the administration have gone farther than the president has wanted to go as it relates to admitting that the Russians meddled in our election, that they tried to sow chaos in the American political system. Clearly, that's the prevailing attitude among most of our diplomatic and national security apparatus, and that, I think, rankled the president to some degree. I think the bigger issues here, though, are frankly what's happening right now. Iran deal and North Korea. I keep coming back to those two issues because those are major cornerstone issues, one left over from the previous administration, one that the president would like to be a landmark achievement from this administration. And it was obvious that he and Tillerson were not on the same page on that. So no matter what happens to Russia and our relationship with Russia, the investigations are ongoing. I think those two issues were driving it. And look, let's go back a year. Or several months anyway, to when Rex Tillerson was supposedly caught demeaning the president's intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
This is a president that doesn't forget insults, and I doubt he had forgotten that insult this morning when he launched the tweet that fired the Secretary of State.
David, Fred says on Twitter, we have no ambassador to South Korea, now no Secretary of State, although Mike Pompeo presumably will replace him. And Fred adds, in something like 7 of 10 top jobs at the State Department are vacant, and we have agreed to a meeting with North Koreans seemingly without preconditions. Do you share Scott's belief that North Korea and what Rex Tillerson has said in the past about it, and then the fact that he wasn't in on this quick decision that the president made to meet with the leader of North Korea was key in Tillerson's firing?
You know, Tillerson's been trying to promote a diplomatic approach as opposed to kind of the fire and fury approach that Trump was taking last year. So I don't feel like they had a total disjunction on North Korea per se. I think it's much more what Scott was talking about in the first place, is that there was just no harmony and no connection between the two of them at all. It is worth pointing out what a devastatingly bad manager Rex Tillerson was of the State Department. I don't think that's why he was fired, but he has devastated the State Department. 60% of the top diplomats in the department have resigned. Morale is at an all-time low. As your guest or your viewer pointed out, that many, many ambassadorships are still unfilled. And he, you know, was so hostile, he never really could relate it at all to anybody in the entire bureaucracy and was even supporting cutting the budgets of his own department. So he has devastated, really, the State Department, and it's a very unfortunate legacy that goes with him out the door.
You know, David, it's puzzling what you've said about how inept, in your view and many others, the leadership of the State Department was. He ran ExxonMobil. It isn't like he didn't know how to run a large organization. What happened?
Well, you know, if you're an outsider with no government experience coming into managing a large government bureaucracy, and that's been done effectively by many business leaders, but what you have to do is you have to, you know, embrace the people who work there and understand how Washington works, how the department works, how to interact with the White House, how to work with Congress, and so on. And Tillerson took the opposite approach. He brought in a small number of close aides. He didn't trust anyone in the entire bureaucracy as if they were a hostile force. And that both isolated him within the department and then made him extremely ineffective in communicating with the outside world and with the White House especially. So never really able to have a real relationship and advance his policy agenda because he was so distrustful of the very people who were there to help support him.
Scott, is that how you read his specific leadership of the State Department?
Yeah, I think that he and the president, frankly, have a real distrust of the national security, intelligence, diplomatic apparatus that exists across administrations. You know, the vast majority of people who work in this bureaucracy are career people. They're not political appointees. That's actually true for every cabinet. But especially in the State Department, you have this vast group of people with all this experience over time. But, of course, the president and many of his people believe that apparatus is hostile to their worldview and hostile to their the way they won the election and hostile to the ideas that they have for the way the United States should act in the world. And I think they were trying to starve the bureaucracy in some ways. And I think both Trump and Tillerson over time had said, we don't need to fill all these jobs. These jobs are not as important as you think they are. So that was one area where Tillerson had actually fulfilled the president's mission, which is to starve this so-called deep state. But obviously doing that wasn't enough to keep the Secretary of State in the president's good graces. And we'll see how the new secretary, Pompeo, handles those vacancies because, as has been pointed out, there are some key vacancies that really could benefit from having seasoned people in there to execute the president's agenda.
Following the news this morning, if you've just joined us, about the firing of Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and the replacement, as the president tweeted and also talked about this morning on his way to California, Mike Pompeo from the CIA stepping in. We're examining with our guests this morning for the hour Rex Tillerson's legacy, his leadership at the State Department, the relationships that he had with world leaders, what it says about how President Trump wants to conduct foreign policy, that he has replaced Tillerson with Pompeo, and any questions and reflections that you have as well on what this means. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter, at @CarrieMPR. David Shanzer with us, director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke, and we found him in China today. Scott Jennings with us, a former special assistant to President George W. Bush, and he's in New York. To the phones to Peter in Minneapolis. Hi, Peter. How are you thinking about this?
Well, I really appreciate the conversation so far, but I just want to caution against projecting too much rationality or consistency onto the president's decision, or even that every aspect of this relates to foreign policy. Trump has expectations of all the people around him to shower him with constant praise, to not acknowledge obvious truths. Russia is one example. And most importantly, to follow his every whim and not acknowledge that when he flips a position, that it's an actual flip. And North Korea is a perfect example. He just took the position that Tillerson has been advocating for a while, negotiation. But it was only just a few weeks or months ago that he mocked Tillerson for the idea that Tillerson was, quote, wasting his time trying to negotiate with North Korea. So theoretically, they just moved closer together on North Korea.
Okay.
But that's not the point. The point is, Trump has a whim. He expects the people around him to follow his whim. That's just one example. I just don't think we should project too much rationality or consistency, because that's not what Trump wants.
Yeah, Peter, since you brought up North Korea again, I want to listen to what the president said. He was on his way to California. You can hear the Marine One in the background, so there's a little bit of interference here. But this is the president talking about making this decision about North Korea.
No, I really didn't discuss it very much with him, honestly. I made that decision by myself. Rex wasn't, as you know, in this country. I made the North Korea decision with consultation from many people, but I made that decision by myself.
Scott, is that revealing to you, the questions that Peter's bringing up in light of what the president just said?
Yeah, I think it's noteworthy, though, that while he and Tillerson had been theoretically moving closer together on negotiating with North Korea, the president first started expressing his anger with Tillerson, I think last November. It was the New York Times that broke the story that the president was going to replace Tillerson with Mike Pompeo. I think it was November 30th. It was right at the end of the month. Now, it took a few months for that to unfold, but obviously this president's been unhappy and thinking of making a change for quite some time. So when you look at it through that framework, it doesn't surprise me that he would not have consulted with Tillerson about North Korea in the last few days, because he'd already mentally made the decision to let him go. I really think a lot of this goes back to the interpersonal relationship that they've clearly never developed. It goes back to Tillerson possibly insulting the president. It goes back to Tillerson never really getting in sync with the president. You know, as has been pointed out, the president changes his mind on things. But as a secretary of state and or anyone who works for this particular president, you got to keep up and make sure that what you're saying matches what he's saying publicly, so that it doesn't look like there's discord in the cabinet. And the president didn't think Tillerson was doing that correctly. Now, we may all sit here and discuss whether that's an effective way to run a government or a foreign policy, but that's the fact, and I think that's why Tillerson didn't survive.
Well, Scott, that's what I wanted to ask you. I mean, when you were serving in the George W. Bush administration, was the president getting advice that he always agreed on, even on big foreign policy decisions? I assume he wanted to hear a range of opinion.
Oh, of course not. I mean, the president, the president I served, George W. Bush, had advisors. I mean, take North Korea, since we're talking about it this morning. He had more hawkish advisors like Vice President Cheney, who wanted to do more aggressive posturing with North Korea. And then he had more people on the dovish side like Condoleezza Rice, who ultimately the president sided with. So there was a lot of disagreement among the president's advisors, but ultimately then the president makes a decision and moves forward. That's really true for, I think, most administrations. In this particular case, this president, I don't think, values dissent, but it's, I think, largely because the president does a lot of thinking out loud. Mm-hmm. And so when he tweets, when he speaks, you know, he probably issues more public communications on a daily basis than most other presidents of a substantial nature. And that makes it extremely difficult for his advisors and I think his cabinet secretaries to figure out, well, what am I supposed to be saying today in light of the latest tweet? So
yeah,
it is a definitely a different management style than the previous White House.
Call here from Jason for you, David, from Forest Lake. Jason, what are you thinking about?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about the methodology here. You know, we're talking about a president who had a fake reality show, who just relished the opportunity to get in front of somebody and say, you're fired. And here's a guy who doesn't have the courtesy with one of our top deck diplomats to call him in to have a reasoned discussion about the future of America, American foreign policy. And he blasts off on a tweet. You're talking about the incompetence of Rex Tillerson is nonsense when we have the incompetence of the management of our president. You were just talking about how this is just a chaotic way to run things. Our diplomats don't know what to say on a daily basis because they don't know where the president stands.
Yeah, David, I think this is a really good point, and Jason is following what Scott said about the way the president communicates on some pretty serious issues, often catching his secretaries, cabinet, and ambassadors and others by surprise. I don't know that anybody has, and maybe Mike Pompeo is going to find this out too, that anybody really has the nimbleness to follow that well. What do you think?
Well, it's not just about his communication. It's about the way he runs things and the way he makes decisions. He's very influenced by whoever he spoke to last, what he saw on TV, if he had a telephone call with a certain friend, and so on. It's not about a policy discussion about all the pros and cons of taking various pathways. It's he does it instinctively and sometimes contrary to the facts and contrary sometimes to what he previously said the day before. So I do think Rex Tillerson did a lot of damage in his management of the State Department, but I agree with the caller that Trump has a wild and irresponsible, I think, decision-making process that is really damaging, I think, U.S. credibility around the world. You mentioned that I'm sitting here in China, and it just seems like living here for 2 months, how the influence and the respect of the United States government has declined so greatly because of the, unpredictable, unreliable nature of our foreign policy over the last 15 months.
You know, David, since you've said that, we did a show yesterday where we talked about, with the tariffs and some of the other decisions, the president's alienation of some of our traditional allies. But we continually ask the question through that hour, how much it really matters, because the United States is still influential. There are still many countries around the world that want a relationship with the United States. And in the end, they know that President Trump is temporary, whether it's for 4 or 8 years, and that this could change with the next person that comes into the Oval Office. So how much does that matter?
Well, sure. Countries aren't writing off the U.S. I mean, we have a huge military presence. We have the biggest and most vibrant economy in the world, and that's not changing anytime soon. But I'll give you one example. The nations from Asia that were part of the Pacific Trans, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership, have gone ahead without us and are forming that trade alliance, which is going to bring $127 billion of growth to the members. All the provisions that we wanted are dropped out, but they're still moving forward without our leadership because they are worried about being dominated by China. And where's America? We're nowhere to be seen on any of those issues, and these are some of our closest allies. So we're talking about, you know, Australia and Korea and Japan. So it is very, very damaging, I think, to us over the long run. I do believe it's something we could recover from, but I don't think it would be under this president.
If you've just joined the conversation, we're talking about the decision President Trump has made to replace his Secretary of State. He's bringing in Mike Pompeo from CIA. And on his way to California this morning, he spoke, again, in front of Marine One. You hear a lot of background noise, but he spoke about the chemistry that he has with his new Secretary of State.
I respect his intellect. I respect the process that we've all gone through together. We have a very good relationship for whatever reason, chemistry, whatever it is. Why do people get along? I've always, right from the beginning, from day one, I've gotten along well with Mike Pompeo. And frankly, I get along well with Rex, too. And, you know, I wish Rex a lot of good things. I think he's going to do, I think he's going to be very happy. I think Rex will be much happier now. But I really appreciate his service. But with Mike, we've had a very good chemistry right from the beginning.
A call here from Julie in Minneapolis. Hi, Julie. You have a brother who works at State. Is that right?
Correct. He's in the Foreign Services.
What's he telling you about the change?
You know, we were texting this morning already, and he had mentioned that when they were floating Pompeo as Secretary of State a few months ago, he thought at least he would treat the state like the national security agency that they are.
What does that, I mean, do you have a sense, Julie, of what your brother means by that?
I think that he felt that Rex Tillerson worked in a vacuum, and that Pompeo at least has the security background to start, you know, maybe filling some of these positions, doing something that the State Department, you know, living up to their potential.
Yeah. Julie, thanks. Scott, that's the isolation that I think you and David have been talking about this morning. Do you have a sense that Mike Pompeo will, you know, lead that the State Department with a much different outlook?
Well, I would say it would be hard for him not to, given that he's coming from the CIA, and it would be he's the first CIA director, I think, to go from that job to becoming the Secretary of State. So clearly he's coming in with a point of view that a CIA director would bring. I also think that he has clearly mastered how to talk to this president. There's been a lot of reporting about how much Trump enjoys the briefings that Pompeo gives him in the Oval Office. I don't think everybody has sort of gelled with the president when it comes to briefing style. So for Pompeo, with a national security focus as CIA director, someone who's clearly figured out how to talk to the president about important world issues in a way that the president enjoys and can internalize, that gives him a huge leg up in influence right out of the gate. The president doesn't have to build a relationship with Pompeo. So if it's true that he's going to treat the State Department like a security agency, which I wholeheartedly agree with, you know, the United States diplomatic core, our international development planning, that is all as important as any military equipment in terms of U.S. national security. If Pompeo brings his security attitude and blends it with what the diplomatic corps can do for national security in a way the president likes in his briefing style, that is going to be a step in the right direction for people who want the United States to continue to be a force for good in the world.
Scott, just before I let you go, you've said something interesting there about the briefing style. And I know you have firsthand experience with this, with George W. Bush. Why does that matter?
Well, it matters because I think this president, I mean, we've learned that he doesn't like to receive information in certain ways. He likes to receive information in a way that I think is different. I mean, he's not reading, 100-page briefing papers. He's not going to sit and listen to long dissertations, I think, in the Oval Office. There's been reporting that he doesn't really enjoy, H.R. McMaster's briefing style, for instance. So I think part of the issue of staffing a president is figuring out how to communicate with that person in a way that makes your information come to life for them, to stick, and to promote your point of view and what you're trying to brief on. I don't think Tillerson really figured that out. Not everybody figures it out. Some people just aren't all that great at it. And that's one thing, for all of Tillerson's management experience running ExxonMobil, he wasn't the person ever briefing someone. Yeah. He was being briefed by others.
Yeah.
And with Pompeo being a CIA director coming into the Oval Office for the last year, every day, giving the president briefings, I think that is going to create some synergies between the president and his new Secretary of State that he didn't have with the old one, that may actually lead to a better information flow coming out of the State Department to the president. So if you care about the State Department's point of view being pushed in the Oval Office, having someone representing it in the Oval who the president likes to listen to is a good thing.
Scott, a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks much.
Thank you.
And David, before I let you go, because I know it's late there in China, did Tillerson have enough, a long enough tenure to really have a legacy, in your view?
Well, he has a legacy of all the bureaucratic and staffing damage that he did. Unfortunately, that is his principal legacy. I want to agree with Scott that is a lot about chemistry and style, but I think this president also likes to get information in a way that fits with his worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And people like Tillerson and H.R. McMasters and Mattis, to some degree, they came in and they were the first people there, and there was relief because there was the idea that, they would pick off some of the president's rough edges help him move away from some of the positions that he took on the campaign, which were clearly very damaging to U.S. national security interests. And the president really didn't like to hear that. And I think that was the big downfall for Tillerson, is that he told him the things about the world that Trump really just didn't want to hear. And I think Pompeo shares Trump's worldview, shares the views expressed during the campaign. And so Trump liked him because he told him what he wanted to hear.
That's something that we'll go on to consider here as our conversation continues. What Mike Pompeo brings to the State Department in this shared worldview with President Trump, and how that will influence the way the United States interacts with other foreign leaders, including this upcoming meeting with North Korea. David, again, I know it's late in China. We really appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Well, I love being on your show. Thank you.
And David Schanzer is director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke, and joining us today from China. We're continuing our conversation with two new guests. Emily Tankin is with us. She's a staff writer for Foreign Policy magazine. Emily, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Andrew Basevich is with us. He's a professor emeritus of history at Boston University and with us from Massachusetts. And Andrew, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Emily, we wanted to pursue this question of the kind of worldview that Mike Pompeo brings into the State Department. How would you assess that?
I heard one of your previous guests saying that it's much closer in line with Donald Trump's own worldview. And I think based on everything we know, that's fair. I think that Secretary Tillerson, while he was obviously sidelined within the Trump administration, did carry a more traditional worldview, perhaps not in terms of how a State Department is run, but in terms of how geopolitics work. Mike Pompeo does not. And I think that's part of the reason that he was brought into the job.
Andrew, do you agree with that, that when the president talks about an establishment way of thinking, as he said this morning, that pretty much does reflect where Tillerson was, and that might be the source of the clashes?
Well, I think I disagree with Emily a little bit. I don't think the president has a worldview. Pompeo probably does. I mean, he is, based on everything that he has said, particularly as a member of Congress, an uber hawk. I mean, who wants regime change in Pyongyang, wants regime change in Tehran. I think that his militaristic inclination probably puts him in the camp that we saw back in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, when people like Vice President Cheney and Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld were riding high. That does reflect a worldview. I think that the president actually doesn't have any such thing.
You know, Emily, I'm assuming that when Rex Tillerson was giving advice to the president, it was in some ways reflective of advice that he was getting from experts at the State Department and in our intelligence agencies. I mean, are we setting up a dynamic here where Mike Pompeo agrees more with the president, but that still means that they disagree with many of the other advisors around them?
Well, I'm hesitant to say that Tillerson was sort of heavily influenced by the knowledge and wisdom of the State Department, because he did spend so much of his time there on this sort of redesign and clashing with career diplomats at the Department of State.
Mm-hmm.
However, yes, is the short answer, right? I think that I sort of don't see those who remain at State trying to carry out the same policies as perhaps Mike Pompeo would like.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew, you know what I'm asking here is there might be some kind of mind meld, you know, on foreign policy between the president and Pompeo, but there's still going to be plenty of other people, I would think, that disagree with what they want to do.
To me, the mind meld, I don't pretend to be able to read the president's mind, but to the extent that there's a mind meld, my speculation would be it would be between the principal subordinates of the president, all of whom now have a very significant military background.
Ah.
We've got a four-star general in the Pentagon, we've got a four-star general who's the White House chief of staff, three-star general who is the national security advisor, and Pompeo, I think not insignificantly, is a graduate of the United States Military Academy and a former Army officer. You know, I don't think that Rex Tillerson's going to go down in history as one of our better secretaries of state, but he was unambiguously a civilian. We can't say that about Pompeo. What we can say is that this president has this strange affinity for surrounding himself with people who have a military background. And we now have a senior group of advisors who bear a military imprint. Now, what the implications of that are, I don't quite understand, but it is something quite significant, I believe.
Well, Andrew, you served in the military. You have a military background. Are you raising concerns? What should we notice about that? What should we be concerned about?
Well, I don't want to suggest somehow that there is this a military mindset and everybody who comes out of the military thinks the same way. I mean, I myself am a graduate of the military academy. But we do have a group of people, perhaps Pompeo somewhat less so, given that his active service was shorter, but a group of people who I think we can fairly say their worldview, and they have a worldview,
mm-hmm.
was shaped by their involvement, their presence, their membership in military institutions. And that doesn't make Mattis a guy who is trigger happy, but I think almost inevitably it makes Mattis and Kelly and McMaster and to some degree Pompeo, who view the world through a very particular lens. And it's in that sense I think that there might be, this is speculation, something of a mild mind meld. Now, how that's going to influence what the president does, I think, is impossible to say because he is so impetuous and therefore may not actually respond to these advisors, even if the four of them are really reading off the same sheet of music.
Emily, a call here from Stacy in Duluth. Hi, Stacy. What are you thinking about here?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You had spoken earlier about how the rest of the world sort of views our, you know, our leadership as, you know, they know it's going to change soon, so maybe they don't take it as seriously. So maybe some of these changes won't be as important. I'm just curious as to the other side of it. Are there any diplomatic implications as to, you know, that would come out of this kind of administration that could be permanent, that would permanently sort of, what would be the worst case scenario diplomatically of an administration like this for our image across the world? And I'm happy to take my call off the air. Thank you very much.
Emily, do you have some insight on that?
Yeah, I do. I think that on the one hand, you know, foreign leaders and foreign diplomats sort of did understand that the Tillerson was not the final word in the Trump administration. On the other hand, it was still the first point of contact for many of them. Even if they could not follow up with the policies there, they could get a meeting there, right? And this is just a change for how they do their day-to-day work. More broadly, Tillerson was a defender of remaining in the Iran deal, or at least, you know, sort of slowing the process by which the president ripped it up or teared it up, as he threatens to do. Pompeo is not. He is quite hawkish on Iran. And that doesn't just change our policy toward Iran. That changes our relationship, I would argue, with all of the allies with whom we made the Iran deal, including our European allies. So, you know, we already have this looming trade war. We already have talk that Trump is going to tie tariffs to defense spending. I think if you add to that a Secretary of State who is vehemently opposed to a deal that our allies are desperately trying to hold together, that is going to have serious ramifications for our relationship with our European allies.
Emily, you were part of a reporting team that wrote a piece for Foreign Policy in January with a headline, Trump's Shadow Hangs Over NATO. And you were in the piece, you're talking about how Trump repeatedly called NATO obsolete as a presidential candidate, refused to fully endorse Article 5, which informs the alliance's mutual defense principle. Where was Rex Tillerson on that? Where might Pompeo be on this?
So Rex Tillerson did, I mean, there were some spaces at which Tillerson did not completely fall in line with the U.S. foreign policy establishment. For example, in an early NATO meeting, he sort of went, questioned the utility of sanctions on Ukraine, and lectured everyone that they had to get their spending plans together in the next, like, 2 months or something. But he did, his department did carry more of a party, more of a traditional U.S. line, right, which is that America is the leader in many senses of NATO, that we value these alliances, that, you know, whereas President Trump, the reason that we wrote that piece is that what foreign diplomats and foreign leaders say is that, you know, we sort of hear everything that we expect to from everyone in the administration but Trump, right? And so Trump, because, and this is why I say he does have a worldview, for decades Trump has been talking about how other countries take advantage of the United States. That is something that that is a belief that he seems to carry with him into the White House, and that is one that I think Pompeo shares more than Tillerson.
And this is interesting, Andrew, if I might read a bit from this piece that Emily reported on about NATO. She writes, as much as Mattis and other military commanders seek to shore up the transatlantic bond, Trump could cause lasting damage to the alliance, which goes to what Stacey was asking us about, undermining trust built up over decades, current and former Western officials say. And then there's a quote from Alexander Virchow, the former NATO deputy secretary general. The transatlantic relationship may be scarred for a long time to come. I guess those are the when you introduce these difficulties into these relationships, that's the kind of long-term damage that might be done. Is it serious in your view?
Well, you know, I'm guessing that if we did a half an hour worth of research, we could probably dig up a bushel basket full of articles and op-eds about NATO over the past 40 years, each one indicating that the collapse of the alliance was at hand. So this is a real perennial. My own guess is that the evolution of NATO will not be permanently affected by what the president has said, that this president will leave, and if the next president, whoever that happens to be, wishes to affirm the American American commitment to NATO, then that will happen, and all of Trump's commotion will be rather quickly forgotten. You know, your caller said, what's the worst case? What's the worst thing that can happen? I don't think the worst case is NATO. The worst case, and this is where Pompeo's addition to the administration should increase this concern. The worst case is a major war in the Korean Peninsula and or a major war against Iran.
Let me ask both you and Emily, how might this meeting with North Korea, the parameters of a change, the reality of a change with Pompeo advising now and Tillerson out? Emily, do you see a big difference given the fact that it was always going to be, you know, Trump leading the charge anyway?
Right. The State Department was not, to the best of my understanding and the best of the reporting that's coming out of Washington, the State Department was not really a part of the decision to meet with North Korea. Now, as one of your previous guests said, Pompeo at the helm of state might bring state, you know, more into that fold. But I'd just like to be really clear, that's going to be Pompeo's state, right? So if somebody is hoping that, oh, well, Pompeo is the head of state now, and that means that this traditional State Department view is going to be more closely interwoven with that of the White House, I don't think that that's what we'll see in general and certainly out of these North Korea talks.
What do you think, Andrew?
Well, I think this is one of the really interesting things. I mean, unless I'm mistaken, Pompeo was on the record as calling for regime change in Pyongyang, you know, that this terrible dictatorship needs to be overthrown. That sort of attitude doesn't seem to particularly consistent with the president's latest insistence that he's going to have this one-on-one summit. How that's going to be resolved, I don't know.
Question here from Twitter here. A listener asks, what does it say to other countries and diplomats that our new Secretary of State was until last week head of the CIA? Very different mission in relation to them. Andrew, is it?
Well, it certainly is a different mission. I don't know that that is all that significant. You know, George Herbert Walker Bush had been director of the CIA, and he became the president of the United States. I don't know that people worried about at that point having a spook in charge of the White House. So Pompeo's own profile includes much more than simply the 14 months or so that he ran the CIA.
Question here, call from James in St. Paul. Hi, James. What are you interested in?
Well, I'd like to, I guess, pose a question that perhaps Trump is very inartfully expressing a scar that's already in the NATO alliance, in that America had some reasonable expectation our European partners would pick up more of the defensive burden at the end of the first part of the Cold War, and that was, they were very reluctant to do so, and that built some resentment on this side of the Atlantic. So we're seeing a scar that was already there rather than the infliction of a new one.
Yeah, James, good point. Emily, I remember the president talking about that at length, right? They don't do their share. Why does the United States always have to step in?
Certainly, Trump is not the first president to make this point. Even prior to coming into office, Jens Stoltenberg, who's sort of NATO's overseer, was encouraging countries to spend more. The Obama administration encouraged European countries to spend more. So it's not that this was a completely new message, right, or that there was no sort of traditional American view that European countries should spend more on defense. I think it was more that sort of Trump threw into question the very use and future of these alliances.
Call here from Brenda in Woodbury. Hi, Brenda. What's your question? What are you thinking about?
What I'm wondering about is if there's a pattern to Trump's actions, in that the actions that the president takes may have nothing to do with the action itself, but is a deflection from what is really going on. And the more outrageous the action, the more effective the deflection. What's in front of us on any given day or any given moment may have nothing to do with, or what Trump says is may have nothing to do with what Trump believes, but rather serves another purpose, and we may not know what that purpose is.
Yeah, there has been some speculation on this, Emily. I'm sure you've seen this already, that with the election in Pennsylvania and the Stormy Daniels stuff and everything else, that this was a good way to grab the attention for that. It seems like there's so much chaos. I mean, you know, he'd have to come out with announcements like this every day to distract the media from some of the other stuff that's going on. What do you think about it?
I mean, you do hear this a lot in Washington, right? Like, why are you covering this when you should be covering that? Or,
right.
Oh, you know, you've fallen for the tweet trap again. I would just, you know, make two notes. One, if it is a distraction, if that is how it is indeed intended, you know, a distraction with very serious or potentially very serious diplomatic consequences. You know, this is not like, oh, Trump tweeted something about, I don't know, Chuck Todd. This is, oh, Trump, you know, replaced the most senior diplomat in the United States. Point one. Point two, I would just note that the timing here sort of gets him in some ways in deeper trouble, and that it comes the day after Tillerson, unlike Trump, very clearly and very forcefully blamed Russia for the attempted assassination of Sergei Skripal. And it's sort of like, if that wasn't the cause of the termination, why on earth would you time it such that it looks like it is when you're sort of already under investigation for your potential ties to Russia?
Mm. Emily, we know you're going to be busy today. We really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Andrew, what would you be watching for in the next 6 months as Pompeo begins his tenure at state?
Well, I'll be interested in the extent to which the views he expresses as Secretary of State reflect the views that he expressed as CIA director, but more importantly, when he was a member of Congress. I mean, the CIA director in general, I think, is not spouting publicly about controversial issues, but as a member of Congress, Pompeo certainly did. So how do you square his antagonism toward North Korea with this initiative of the president, this willingness to negotiate? I mean, so we'll have to see how that plays out. I think the second thing is, to the extent that Tillerson's legacy mostly seems to have been to create turmoil within the State Department, famously leaving positions vacant, will Pompeo, as an administrator, be able to, you know, calm the waters, restore morale, get people appointed, and get the State Department really back on its feet once more? It'll be interesting to see how he does that. As I understand it, the reports of his tenure at the CIA, basically he got high marks with the way he ran the agency. So we'll want to see if he can repeat that record at state.
And one note here, Andrew, you're correct that Mike Pompeo has said on the record that he believes a regime change in Pyongyang would be the best. So we've clarified that. And thank you for the time. Thanks for the insight today.
Thank you.
Andrew Bacevich, Professor Emeritus of History at Boston University. More coverage on this replacement of Secretary of State through the day and on All Things Considered tonight.